Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Welcome in. This is the latest edition of the Character Concerns podcast. My name is Chris Nocero, riding solo again. Going to have a different kind of show for you today. Going to talk about transfer portal announcements. Obviously, that is notable for the draft because there's players on that list, people that we've been telling you to check out this year, to watch for as potential draft picks in the 25 draft. And those players have announced that they're going to enter the portal. Doesn't mean they're going to stay. They could very well enter the draft still, but with NIL being a thing now, it certainly makes the chances of them going pro a little less likely. So we could be seeing some of these guys to watch for next year. Also going to recap conference championship weekend in the world of college football. I thought there were some really good performances there. Certainly a lot less to break down. And then we're going to return to the mock draft roundup. I've got a freshly curated list of mock drafts where the Chiefs are going according to these mock drafts. Kind of a breakdown of the position groups that are being forecasted for the Chiefs. But I want to start with the Chiefs rookie class. What was it? 3-4 weeks ago, I was on here and I was telling you guys that Xavier Worthy, first-round pick, wide receiver out of Texas for the Chiefs, was someone that I think was taking some steps forward. A player you were starting to see kind of start to find their own. Obviously, it's not a breakout situation. It was more like he was on the cusp of a breakout. I think the last month, we've started to see him put up the kind of performances that give you a little bit of hope that this kid might be able to turn a corner as the season goes along, or maybe even early next year as he gets another year under his belt. If you look at his stat line for the year, it's not crazy. We're not talking about a rookie sensation here. In 13 games played, he's got 38 receptions for 448 yards, 4 touchdowns. But if you look at his production the last month, the last 4 games, 18 receptions, 202 yards, and a touchdown, which, you know, is not an amazing stat line. But if you know Andy Reid's history is, the Chiefs' history is rookie wide receivers, you know that kind of production is something that you don't typically see. I know Rashi Rice, you know, almost had 1,000 yards last year, but that's generally an aberration. You look at some of these other rookie wide receivers, and like early on, it could be a little tough for them to produce at really high levels. Tyreek Hill was less than 600 receiving yards. Like, this is Tyreek Hill's stat line from his rookie year. He had 16 games played, 61 receptions for 593 yards and 6 touchdowns. He averaged about 9.7 yards per reception and I believe it's 11.7 yards per reception for one Xavier Worthy. Now you also had the carries to go along with it. Tyreek Hill was over 200 receiving yards on like 23, 24 carries. And he also had three rushing touchdowns. I mean, rushing yards, not receiving yards. He had over 200 rushing yards on like 23, 24 carries. And he had three rushing touchdowns. So he was being used in a little bit more of a complete way, but also he had Jeremy Maclin. Jeremy Maclin was really good his rookie year. So during Tyreek's rookie year, so they had a little bit more of a reliable option in the receiving core, and he was also converting from a running back to a wide receiver. So he was still learning the position, but still good production from him. And you look at Xavier Worthy, and yeah, the wow factor hasn't quite been there other than a couple deep touchdowns he's had. But I think there's the foundation is there. And, you know, for him to be averaging, if at his current pace of the last four games, where basically he's averaging 50 receiving yards a game and, you know, four or five catches a game. At that pace, if he continues like that the rest of the year, he'll actually be almost 700 receiving yards on the season. And even with that extra game in tow, I mean, he'll be ahead of what Tyreek Hill's pace was as a receiver his rookie season. Now, I'm not saying that he is Tyreek Hill. I'm just saying that of the archetype that he represents, the speedster, the deep threat, the guy who's amazing after the catch, I think he's starting to show a little bit. There were some plays in last night's game against the Chargers where, you know, that crucial 3rd and 10 where, you know, there is a – Mahomes is under duress. They send a blitz. He moves up in the pocket and jumps and throws, and Xavier Worthy is able to make a catch. He kind of bobbles it a little bit, but still is able to get a 14-yard reception on that play. You know, that's one of those plays where he had to break his route off because of the coverage and then find a spot where he could sit and catch that pass on a crucial 3rd down on what ended up being the final drive of the game. That right there, to me, that kind of play right there shows the maturation of an Xavier Worthy. Because if you remember late last year, like mid-late last year, we started seeing Rashi Rice do the same thing. He started to sit on some of those routes. And there were times where you could kind of see him start to click in his head what the coverage was and how to adjust his route to attack it. And that's, to me, that's really, really impressive. And it's nice to see another receiver, aside from Rashi Rice, young receiver, pick that part of the game up. And you know, we'll see what happens when Hollywood comes back, because presumably he'll be back here in a, you know, 2-3 weeks or so. But at least right now, I think we're seeing some positive developments from Xavier Worthy. And so in that regard, I thought that was, you know, one of, I think, the most important takeaways from the game last night. The other takeaway, another one of the takeaways I had was about Jaden Hicks. The 4th-round safety the Chiefs took in this year's draft. Hicks is starting to see his usage go up. Early in the season, he wasn't playing much defensive snaps. He was playing a large majority of the special team snaps, you know, generally right around 80%, maybe a little below, a little above. But the last couple weeks, his percentage of snaps on the defensive side has actually started to shoot up. Originally, it was like single-digit snaps, and then it jumps to like, you know, he's right around that 12 to 15% range. And then last week, he was at 35.3% of the snaps against the Raiders on Black Friday. And then you look at the snaps that he had in the game against the Chargers, and he played in 43.3% of the defensive snaps. And his special team snaps have fallen. They were at their lowest of the season last night with 46.2 of those snaps. That tells me that Jaden's starting to get some run on the defensive side. And it kind of, you know, backs up what I was kind of thinking at the beginning of the year, which is that Jaden Hicks was basically going to get a red shirt, you know, training year, if you will, so that he could be groomed to be the potential replacement for Justin Reed. His game and Justin Reed's game match up big time. And if you look at Justin Reed this year, and, you know, I love the dude, but he's kind of been a liability in coverage, especially in man coverage. And, you know, Justin still very good in short yardage situations, very good coming up and essentially being like an extra linebacker. He's a thumper, good blitzer. But, you know, down the field in coverage against tight ends, against running backs and whatnot, he's been a bit of a liability this year. There's been a few times where he's gotten burned in coverage. The Raiders game, he got burned in coverage. You know, we saw against the Bengals, I mean, he was getting eaten up by Drew Sample in that game. I think that the Chiefs, you know, in their measure to try to save money, because you're paying your quarterback a premium, a premium in the sense of, you know, value, percentage of the salary cap. You're paying them a lot of money, but, you know, the Chiefs are very much a team that wants to save on costs where they can. And you see a kid in Jaden Hicks, who's really talented, who's very much undervalued, could very well end up being one of, if not the steal of the draft. And, you know, you're able to bring him in, and you are able to see that throughout the year he's starting to get more usage on the defensive side. And it's not due to injury. It's due to him earning his time out there. And, you know, I think Jaden hasn't quite had that game, that signature game yet, where, like, he's arrived. He's just kind of out there, and you're seeing the production, the usage of him increase. But I think that game could be coming. You know, for those of you know, this was, aside from Xavier Worthy, this was my favorite draft pick for the Chiefs. I thought that this kid, you watch that film when he was at Washington State, and you see he's big, he's physical, he's not afraid to come up in the run game and tackle you, or in the short passing game and tackle you. He can cover. You know, I'll be really interested to see what he does down the field as a cover guy, because I do think that's an integral part to playing in Spag's system. But I really do think that the increased usage that this kid has, don't be shocked if he's the starting strong safety next season. Don't be shocked if, you know, Justin Reed hits free agency, even though he's, you know, only like 27 right now. Don't be shocked if he hits free agency again when his contract's done and the Chiefs are just saying, hey, we appreciate your time here, and let's try to get a little younger. Let's try to save some money because, you know, we've got some other positions we have to look at paying. I mean, they did just hand out some big contracts to some guys, and I kind of feel like Nick Bolton is probably going to get a decent, you know, not a massive, massive contract, but a decent little amount of money to stay in Kansas City. I think Nick Bolton's relationship with Steve Spagnuolo is something that gives him, you know, it probably lends itself to him getting an extension at some point this offseason. And then the final thing I'll say about the young players there, I got to give hats off here to a guy that, you know, got a little flack last few weeks with how he's played. And I gave him a little grace last week, and that was Wanye Morris, left tackle for the Chiefs. He backed up DJ Humphries this week. DJ Humphries, you know, there was some miscommunication issues with him and, like, Tooney as far as, like, picking up stunts and whatnot in the pass rush game. But overall, I thought he played all right. You know, definitely you can see some rust out there. It's kind of what you expect from a guy you just got off the streets a couple weeks ago and hasn't played football all year. But he injures his hamstring. I think that, you know, whenever you hear hamstring injury in football or in any other sport, you think a few weeks missed. Like, I'll say this, I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't play the rest of the regular season just as a precautionary measure, because that seems to be how Andy Reid does things as far as injuries go. And Wanye goes in on that last drive when Humphries got pulled out of the game because of that injury about 4 minutes to go. And Wanye held his own. I'll give him credit where credit is due. He held his own at the end of that game. It's a small sample size. But the thing I said about Wanye was this. I appreciate when someone takes accountability for their mistakes, owns up to it, and says, hey, I'm going to work my ass off to get better. And, you know, he acknowledged that after the game this week. He acknowledged it after the game last week. Hey, you know, you didn't get the best from me, but I'm going to work on it. And he apologized to his teammates for how he had performed against the Raiders, which, you know, look, man, the Raiders – They got some good pass rushers, so I don't think anybody who knows the game like that thought that one knee was going to have a good day there. But yeah, he had a really, really bad day against the Raiders, and short, small sample size here against the Chargers. But I thought he did a good job in that scenario of coming in and not holding, you know, not having his head down and accepting the challenge. So I don't know, maybe some of y'all think I'm a little too soft on Wanya or whatever. And, you know, I'll admit, like, Wanya has not played up to the level that he needs to play at to be the starting left tackle for the Chiefs. And I think the Chiefs were justified in going out and getting DJ Humphreys. But, man, like, I think Wanya, that was a good showing yesterday, last night. And I think Wanya's probably going to play. He's probably going to be your starting left tackle over the next few weeks or so, unless the hamstring injury that DJ Humphrey suffered is not something that's going to keep him out at all. As far as, you know, I'm recording this in the early afternoon on Monday. I have not seen anything about Humphrey's injury. But I assume, you know, you see an injury like that, and it's probably not something that you think he might not be able to play on. I'm just looking it up right now, and Andy said that his hamstring feels a little bit better this morning, but he's going to get an MRI. That's not really a whole lot of information. You know, feeling a little better, you know, I'm sure a lot of injuries feel a little bit better the morning after you sustain them with treatment and whatnot, and you not out there putting any more stress on that injury. But, you know, we'll see. We don't have an actual diagnosis yet, so there's a lot to remain. But I think it is safe to assume that one is likely to be the starter again for maybe a week or two, if not for the rest of the season. So I like the mindset that he had after his performance against the Raiders, and I hope that that allows him to kind of, you know, refocus and get to a point where he is able to perform at an adequate level for what the Chiefs are looking for at left tackle. And then at the same time, you know, Kingsley Suamataia, hopefully he's still putting in the work behind the scenes. He was a healthy and active last night. Hopefully he's able to put in the work behind the scenes to be able to get to a point where next year he can compete and potentially win that left tackle job in a way that where he actually won the job, as opposed to, you know, a situation where this year where it kind of felt like the Chiefs handed him the job as soon as he put the pads on. So I want to get to the transfer portal. Some notable names for players this year. This will obviously have implications on the 26 draft. Some of these guys may not actually transfer. Some of these guys may choose to stay where they're at. Some of these guys may choose to enter the draft anyways. I mean, we have seen that in the past where players have said they were going to transfer and instead opted to enter the draft. So this is just a list of people who have entered in, but nothing has been decided. It's still really early in the process. Starting out with LSU wide receiver CJ Daniels, a guy that many people thought could be a dark horse, you know, second day receiver in the draft, but obviously did not happen. Georgia cornerback Julian Humphrey, who started 10 games for this year, but then got benched in the latter part of October, I believe. And October or maybe in early November, he got benched. And since then, you know, he basically made up his mind he was going to transfer. There's this five-star receiver at Texas Tech named Micah Hudson. He was a five-star in 2023, and this kid, I think, is probably going to be one of, if not the most coveted guys on the transfer portal. I think the bigger schools are really going to try to go all out to try to get him, because this is a kid that was very, very highly thought of, a good-sized receiver, and this is a guy that, you know, could play his way into the first round with the level of talent that he has. USC quarterback Miller Moss, who I know has visits scheduled with Mizzou and with Louisville. This is a former four-star quarterback. This is a guy you could be seeing getting some hype for the draft in the future. So if you're one of those draft heads like me, this is definitely a guy you want to look out for and see where he ends up going. Texas A&M quarterback Connor Wegman, a guy that we were talking about at the beginning of the year as a potential first-round quarterback. Wegman, I think by the time the Notre Dame game happened in like early September, early and mid-September, it was very obvious that he's not the dude for that. He's not a first-round quarterback, and he needs a lot more work. And I think this is a great choice for him. I'll be interested to see where he goes. It didn't work out at Texas A&M, but maybe he goes to a program that has a better offensive coordinator, has better coaches overall for his position, and he's able to build some chemistry with some good receivers, be in a better system, and he's able to play his way into the first round. I mean, Cam Ward was he was really good at Washington State, but you didn't hear about him as a potential first rounder until he went to Miami and he started playing well really early in the season. And now I think he's a consensus first-round quarterback in most mocks. Oklahoma wide receiver Nick Anderson, a guy who I thought could potentially be a late first, early second wide receiver, didn't play this year. He was hurt all year long. That'll be really interesting. I mean, he's obviously going to go to a top program. I don't think he's going to transfer to some, you know, lesser program just so we can get an opportunity. This kid was very highly thought of. So I certainly think that this is going to be a big addition for whoever gets him. OU is also going to be also has one of their backup quarterbacks, Jackson Arnold. He's going to be entering the portal as well. Kentucky has two receivers jumping in the portal. First one is Dane Key, who had late day two potential in my eyes. This was a guy that was really, really talented. You saw in some of those performances, like Ole Miss game, he was really, really good against Ole Miss down there in Mississippi. I thought he played well enough this year, even though he didn't have a great system, great quarterback situation. I thought he played well enough to, if he has a good pre-draft situation, performs well in the combine, performs well at pro days, senior bowl, etc., maybe he gets himself into that late day two mix. But I get it from his perspective, because I think he's really talented, and I think he's going to be one of the more coveted receivers, because he's going to be I think he's got 1 year of eligibility left. He's going to be an instant plug and play guy for whoever goes and gets him. And this is a guy, I think they're the top schools, like after Micah Hudson, I think he's probably the receiver that is going to get the most attention as far as the transfer portal goes. Berrien Brown, the other receiver at Kentucky, he is also entering the portal as well. That's more of a slot speedster type guy. I was really interested to see what his 40 time was going to be, because I thought that was going to influence, and probably he was going to make some money if he ran something that was sub 4.4, which I think everyone was thinking he was probably going to be mid 4.3s or whatnot. So this is a guy to certainly look out for. A guy I really liked out of Alabama, defensive tackle Jaheim Otis. Massive. He's huge. He's like Chris Jones's size, about 6'5", 320 or so. Huge, massive lineman, massive defensive tackle. Got a lot of hype early in the preseason rankings, but as the year went along, early in the season, he decided to opt to redshirt that year in early October because he was getting passed up on the depth chart and he was losing snaps to other defensive tackles. So he decided he was going to transfer so he could preserve a year of eligibility. And I imagine he'll go somewhere that's really needing a defensive tackle, a high profile program that's going to give him an opportunity to shine, so he could potentially play his way into the first round. It's guys like him that normally would enter the draft and go wherever they're going to go. You know, if he's a third day pick, he's a third day pick. But now, because of the nature of NIL and the nature of the draft in general, where, you know, nowadays teams are not going to be quite as prone to reach on certain positions, they're getting smarter with taking guys where value is, as opposed to, you know, hey, we need an edge rusher, let's go get him in the first round. Yeah, guys like Jaheim Otis probably are missing out on money if they go in the draft too early. So I think this is a good one for him. This is another guy I think is going to be very highly coveted. NC State wide receiver Casey Conception. 2 years at NC State. In 2 years, he's got 125 catches, 1,305 yards and 16 touchdowns. This kid's mainly a slot receiver. He's going to get a lot of hype. He's mainly going to be more of an additional piece to an already really good offense because he is going to play in the slot. But this is a kid I could definitely see him with the way that he's produced early on. This is a kid might be a good second day pick in a future draft. I don't know if he's going to get the kind of usage to be a number one because he's mainly been a slot guy. But I do think there is value in someone with his skill set. You've got Florida cornerback Jakeem Jackson. I think Jakeem Jackson has a lot of potential as a man cover corner on the outside. So I think there's definitely going to be – he's going to be a guy to look out for in 26. You got Louisiana Monroe running back Ahmad Hardy. In his first year, he's a true freshman this year, 1,300 yards and 13 touchdowns. Running back is becoming much more important in football because of the too high safety coverages that teams are running now. And that means that guys like Ahmad, who are very skilled, that show that promise very early on in their college careers, very productive, they are going to be coveted by the top contending teams. It wouldn't be shocked if he ends up at one of the top tier programs out there in the college game. Purdue safety Dylan Thieneman. This is a freshman All-American in 2023. This guy had over 100 tackles this year, multiple interceptions, multiple pass deflections. You're talking about a guy who very, very productive at the safety role. Safeties becoming very important in the run game, in the short passing game. 100 tackles as a safety, that means that you're going to be able to get out there in the flats, tackle those receivers on those short passes, running backs, tight ends on short passes. A lot of value there. FIU wide receiver Eric Rivers, who was fifth in the FBS in yards at 1,172 and touchdowns at 12 this year. That's another guy you should be looking out for as a top program guy. Certainly someone, wherever he goes, he's probably going to be on my watch list next year, a wide receiver, because the way this draft is going, I'm not sure the Chiefs go wide receiver first round. Maybe they go one later in the draft, like late second day, early third day. And if that's the case, maybe the Chiefs are looking for some more value, a wide receiver in 26. And then finally, Nebraska edge rusher Princewill Umanmilin, who is the younger brother of Princely Umanmilin, a guy I've been telling you guys to watch for a while now. Apparently, the Umanmilin family has a naming convention with their kids because there are three of them that have played college ball. There's Prince Umanmilin, who played for Tarleton State. Then you have Princely Umanmilin, who played for my Florida Gators and then transferred this past offseason over to Ole Miss and is looking like he's probably going to be like a day two edge rusher, maybe day one if he really kills it pre-draft. And then now you got Princely Umanmilin, good measurables. This is a four-star kid at Nebraska. I assume he's going to – I wouldn't be shocked if, like, Ohio State ends up being where he ends up going because Ohio State seems to have a lot of good luck with these pass rushers. So certainly a kid to look out for in the transfer portal because I think this kid, he's going to have an opportunity to really shine and make himself some money next year. For conference championship recap, I'm going to start with Ashton Jeanty from Boise State, the running back. 32 carries for 209 yards and a touchdown. This kid, just every time he touches the ball, it's electric. He's so much fun to watch. And I think that someone's probably going to reach on him because of that pop, because of that flash. But, I get it because when you watch this kid on film, he just looks like he's better than everyone else on the field. Penn State and Oregon, they had a really nice game on Saturday night in the Big Ten title game. Drew Aller, a guy who I do not think is going to enter in this year's draft, but he did have he was 20 of 39 for 226 yards, three touchdowns, two picks. I think Aller would probably benefit from staying another year because I think he, as talented as he is, he's a guy that was not consistent. He was very up and down. There's times where you see that arm strength. You see what he can do on the field, but, you know, as a runner and whatnot. But I don't think he was super consistent. There was times in this game against Oregon where, like, you do see the arm talent, and then you see him make mistakes, and they end up hurting the team with the way that he's not very consistent. And I think in regards to his draft profile, he'd benefit from staying another year. I think if he goes this year, he's probably a maybe a third round pick at that position. I just think the quarterback position's really, really weak in this year's draft. So Allen would probably benefit from staying another year. Their running back, Nick Singleton, who, you know, I think is going to be a very good value when he gets drafted. 10 carries, 105 yards. Tyler Warren, the tight end that has been very commonly mocked to the Chiefs late in the first round. He had 7 catches for 84 yards. I think he also had a couple of carries for 2 yards as well. So you do see the athleticism pop out there with him. He did leave some yards on the field there. I think he had like a drop or two. But, yeah, incredibly talented tight end. And then on the other sideline, Dillon Gabriel, 22 of 32 for 283 yards and 4 touchdowns. And then Tez Johnson, wide receiver for the Ducks, had 11 catches for 181 yards and a touchdown. Carson Beck, quarterback for Georgia. The interesting thing about him, if you didn't see the game, there was a throw in the first half where he injured, it looked like he injured his elbow. It looked very similar to the Josh Allen UCL injury that he got a couple years ago, and Brock Purdy as well a couple years ago, where he's got his arm back cocked like he's about to throw a pass, and then defender grabs their forearm or the wrist or whatnot as he's doing his throwing motion, and it clearly injures the elbow there where that UCL is. And it makes me wonder if that's what happened. I'm not a doctor or anything, and they haven't put anything out conclusive that I've seen about it yet. But Carson Beck is a guy that you've heard a lot about from, you know, different draft circles and whatnot as a potential first round pick. I haven't bought it. I understand where the love for him is, and scouts really, really do like him. But I think that if he does have a UCL injury that requires surgery or requires an extensive amount of rehab, it's going to be something that costs him money. I already thought that he was probably playing himself out of the first round. He was probably a day two guy, maybe mid second round. But an injury like this might push him all the way to the third day. And that's unfortunate, but, you know, it certainly is, you know, kind of how it rolls sometimes. The edge rushers for Georgia, though, they really killed it against Texas in the SEC title game. Mykael Williams, you know, I've seen back and forth. I've seen Mykael be listed as the best edge rusher in this draft class. I've seen Jaylen Walker occasionally being considered the best, though I'm seeing a lot more Abdul Carter here lately. But Mykael Williams, 2 sacks. Jaylen Walker had a sack in the SEC title game. And then, you know, a couple guys I talked to you guys last week about, you know, receivers who accepted invites to the Senior Bowl in the Big 12 title game. You had Jaden Higgins, wide receiver for Iowa State, 7 catches for 115 yards. And then his teammate Jalen Noel had 5 catches for 64 yards and a touchdown. And then a guy who, you know, had a lot to say after the game, Cam Scatabo from Arizona State, 16 carries, 170 yards, 2 touchdowns. After the game, he went out and declared that he was the best running back in the country. And, you know, I like the bravado and whatnot. And, you know, maybe he is. I mean, the one thing you can say about Ashton Jeanty is that, you know, the issue for him is he's not playing at the highest of levels. This is a Mountain West player, and you got a kid in Scatabo who's in a Power Four conference in the Big 12 in Arizona State, able to go out there and get the win. I'm going to be really interested to see what he's going to be able to do in the college football playoff, because he as well might be able to make himself some money. So moving on to the mock draft roundup, I know you guys are really excited about the mock drafts. You love when we talk about these things. I want to start with all these mock drafts are from dating all the way back to the beginning of December. So we got about 9 days worth of mock drafts here. They started getting a little redundant once we got back into November. But starting out with Daniel Harms from the Draft Network, he has the Chiefs taking defensive tackle Kenneth Grant from Michigan, who I love. And him or Tyler Warren are probably my two favorite picks that the Chiefs can get in the first round of the 25 draft. from Cam Meller at the College Football Network. He's got them taking the aforementioned Tyler Warren, tight end from Penn State. Sayre Bettinger from NFL Spin Zone is the Chiefs taking tackle. Josh Connerly from Oregon, a guy I've been telling you guys to watch. Jacob Infante from the Pro Football Network has the Chiefs taking tackle Wyatt Millam from West Virginia, a guy who has been working his way up the draft boards as the season has gone along. He's had a really good season this year. Vinny Iyer from Sporting News has them taking Tyler Warren. Josh Edwards from CBS, one of the better mock drafters out there. He has them taking tackle Cameron Williams from Texas. Danny Kelly from The Ringer has the Chiefs taking Siobhan Revel Jr. from ECU. He's a cornerback. If you guys remember, he's the one that tore his ACL in practice back in, I think it was September. And very unfortunate story for him. He is going to be at the Shrine Bowl. I don't know if and how much he's going to participate there. Siobhan Revel Jr., if they were able to get him late in the first round, that would be a steal, because this was a guy that at one point was thought to be the top corner in this draft class. It was a debate between him and like Will Johnson at the very least. Kurt Popejoy from DraftWire has them also taking tackle Cameron Williams from Texas. Chris Trapasso from CBS has them taking defensive tackle Walter Nolan from Ole Miss. Michael Middlehurst-Schwartz from USA Today has them taking tackle Josh Simmons from Ohio State. Ian Valentino from 33rd Team has them taking cornerback Azariah Thomas from Florida State. Dane Brugler from The Athletic has them taking defensive tackle Alfred Collins from Texas. Alfred Collins, a guy, again, who's been on the list all year long. I think he was like one of the guys on the freaks list. I don't think Brugler makes that list. I can't remember who at The Athletic makes it. But Alfred Collins, you had Tavondre Sweat there at Texas. You had Byron Murphy at Texas, and Alfred Collins was really kind of the third of that trifecta there of freak athlete defensive tackles they got there. Alfred Collins is a guy I think you should definitely be looking out for late first round to the Chiefs as well. Blake Brockermeyer from CBS has them taking quarterback Jade Barron from Texas. Matt Rooney from Bleacher Nation has them taking Cameron Williams, the tackle from Texas. So a lot of Texas people here. Michael France from SI, Tyler Warren. Trevor Sikkema from Pro Football Focus, Josh Simmons, tackle from Ohio State. Christian D'Andrea from For the Win has them taking a guy that I actually think is another freak athlete. I'm not sure first round is where he goes, but second round he might be a priority guy for some teams. Tight end Harold Fannin Jr. from Bowling Green. This is a kid that has gotten a lot of hype for his athleticism, his production at that level. Again, it's Bowling Green, so you're not in a premier conference with premier athletes that you're going up against. But, you know, for guys at his position with his level of athleticism, guys like that pop out on tape. And generally you get to the next level, you got good coaching, got a good offense, they can get some usage out of you. So Harold Fannin Jr. is a guy you should definitely be looking out for in those draft circles in pre-draft, because he, at the combine, if he does end up attending and whatnot, he might be a guy that really pops off and ends up becoming a big winner from the combine. Jamie Eisner from the Draft Network has them taking Jade Barron, cornerback from Texas. And then finally, Ryan Gosling, not the movie star, I assume, from Pro Football Network has them taking safety Nick Emmanuori from South Carolina. So to break down the positions, of the mocks that we have, and looks like we have 19 mocks. 4 are tight ends, 7 are offensive tackle, 3 are defensive tackle, 4 are cornerback, and then 1 is a safety. Now, I'm going to tell you this right now, first and foremost, safety's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Brian Cook still got one more year left on his contract, and you got Jaden Hicks going into the second year of his contract. I think Jaden Hicks is probably going to be your starting strong safety next year, unless something happens and the Chiefs decide that Justin Reed should stay on the team for a little bit longer. Wouldn't shock me, but I'm of the assumption that Jaden Hicks is going to be your guy at starting strong safety next year. So I don't think safety's on the board for them. I think there's other pressing needs in the first round, and safety's just not really a priority for me. If they do go safety, might be later in the first round, but you know, you have Brian Cook going into the last year of his deal. Chamari Connor is going to go into the third year of his deal, and then you got a second year safety in Jaden Hicks as well. I just don't, I'm not really buying the whole safety thing. So let's take that off the board. So now we've got tight end, offensive tackle, defensive tackle, and corner. I did bring up corner being a position of need for the Chiefs in this year's draft and maybe it being bigger than what we thought. And, you know, I actually think Joshua Williams has played a lot better since he's actually come in place of Nazi Johnson. And granted, you will need to spend some money because Trent McDuffie, you presume his contract coming up here pretty soon. He does have, because I'm sure at the end of the year, they're going to pick up the fifth year option on him. So two more years on his rookie deal, but he's going to be wanting to get his contract lined up here pretty soon. I don't think he's going to sit around and wait for a contract extension for, you know, the end of his rookie contract. He's going to want that before. And it wouldn't shock me if in this offseason his agent was really pressing to get that done now. If that's the case, then you do want to go and at least draft one corner so that you have some depth on your roster, because you do got two other guys from that 22 class and Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams. And, you know, I think Jalen is a guy that's played really well. And, you know, the Chiefs don't typically pay out middle class contracts for positions like that. And I think that's probably what he would warrant if he plays like he did this year. Next season in his contract year, I think he might price himself out with the Chiefs. So I think it'd be good to go get one. I just don't think first round is where you need to go. I think second round or third round, you can go get a guy. You know, there's that Denzel Burke kid from Ohio State that I think it could very well be there either late second or early third. I really like him. He's another big corner, a guy who potentially could have, you know, you were hearing a lot about could be a first round pick at corner. So I don't know if first round is where you need to go for corner. I do think you do need to get a corner. I just don't think at the top of the draft is where you need to get him. So I'm going to cross that one off. So you got tight end, you got tackle, you got offensive tackle, you got defensive tackle. I'm taking offensive tackle off the board in the first round. And the reason why is because I just don't think the value's there. If you're going to get a tackle, I think you go and get a developmental guy later in the draft that has the measurables but doesn't have the production to match. Like, to me, I think that the guys you are going to be taking in the late first round at tackle are going to be at the same level as Kingsley Suamataia. And Kingsley Suamataia was a late second round pick in a really good tackle class. And so now you're talking about taking a Kingsley Suamataia basically a round earlier, a first round pick. And I'm not really down with that. I do think the Chiefs probably go get a tackle later in the draft. They do a Darian Kennard-like pick. Kennard, if you guys remember, guard at Kentucky. He had great measurables, huge arms, huge hands, and that the Chiefs saw that and they were like, "Oh, we might be able to turn this dude into a tackle." And so they traded back up. I think it was the sixth round. They traded up into, or maybe it was the fifth round. They traded up into it, and they went and grabbed Darian Kennard so that they could see if they could, you know, strike gold. And it didn't work. You know, he didn't really pan out, but yeah, it was worth a try with a third-day pick. I think that's probably where they go if they go that way. I think they're going to probably get a developmental guy who maybe showed a little something at the collegiate level, and they think they could find some good value out of that. So I'm not really on the whole, you know, draft a tackle in the first round camp. I just don't think this is that kind of draft. I mean, let me just give you a clue of just how not good this tackle class is. The top two tackles in this draft class are Will Campbell from LSU and Kelvin Banks from Texas. Both of those guys right now are not being listed exclusively at tackle on draft boards. They're being listed as tackle slash guard, which means that a lot of people think that those guys might have to move inside to guard. Now, you do see some high, you know, highly taken tackles move into guard. We saw that with Peter Skoronski, where he was a little bit smaller coming out of Northwestern. He's a smaller tackle, and he got drafted by the Titans, and then they very quickly moved him inside to guard. But he's been really good at guard. So, you know, it is what it is. But in a draft that does not have a surefire thing at tackle to begin with, for your top two listed tackles to be guys that might have to move inside, and then after that, you've just got a whole bunch of project guys at tackle, I don't think you need to go take one in the first round if that's as good as you're going to get. And there's some options. Again, you know, I just named off some names. You had Cameron Williams. You had Josh Connerly. You got Ariante Ursery, who was not on there, but Ursery is another tackle out of Minnesota that a lot of people like in that late first round range, early second round range. I'm not really on board with taking a tackle late first round because I don't think the value's there. You have a project guy in Kingsley Suamataia that they really like, and I think at this point you don't want to draft another project guy at that same position. So that's the reason why I'm out for tackle. So now you go tight end, you got defensive tackle. I mean, if we're going defensive tackle, like I said, if Kenneth Grant is there, I feel like it would be really hard for the Chiefs to pass him up. Kenneth Grant is great. He's not as great as his teammate Mason Graham, who's probably going to be a top five pick at defensive tackle. But Grant is really special. He's a good pass rusher. I don't know if you're getting Chris Jones, but I think you're getting a good pass rusher. And I think you're also getting a guy who's going to be really good against the run as well. To me, that's where you go. If he's there, unless Tyler Warren is also available and he looks extra special in that pre-draft process and somehow he falls to within striking range for you to trade up with, or he just falls straight to wherever the Chiefs are at, picking in the first round. If that happens, I don't know how the Chiefs can pass him up. Like, I just don't know how Andy could pass up a Tyler Warren if he's there. But if there was a guy that could force their hand, it would be Kenneth Grant. And then the other option, if it was Harold Fannin Jr., again, I think is probably more so second round pick at tight end. But Fannin could really work his way up some boards. He might get unfairly labeled a workout warrior because he's not getting a ton of hype right now because of where he plays at. But if you watch that kid on tape, you see an elite athlete out there. You see a kid that is capable of doing some great things at that position. He just needs some more seasoning. And, man, a guy like him in that offense for the Chiefs, I think he could do some great things too. Warren would still be my guy. That's still the priority for me. But, you know, after him at tight end, I think Harold Fannin Jr., I don't think you can go wrong with there. So that's it for this episode of Character Concerns Podcast. Please download, subscribe, wherever you listen to podcasts. 5-star review. We appreciate it. Again, Bink still out indefinitely, but is efforting to be able to get back here as soon as he possibly can. But yeah, I appreciate you guys taking time out of your day to listen to me ramble on about college sports and the NFL draft. Yeah, we're starting to get close here. We just had the college football playoff, the final bracket get put out yesterday. I think it was great for the sport. Me and Bink were just texting before I came in and recorded. And, he was very, very excited about this whole college football playoff scenario and what it could do. And I think it's great for a lot of these players because it gives them the opportunity to work their way into playing in prime games, getting prime tape for scouts to see. These games are going to matter a lot, and I think it's going to be a great test of character, and it's going to be a great way for you to put some great things on tape for NFL teams. So I'm really excited about the college football playoff coming up here in a few weeks, and I hope you guys are too, and I hope you guys will stick with us as we continue the coverage of the NFL draft and how it relates to the Kansas City Chiefs. So I'm Christian Ocero. Please download, subscribe, tell your friends about the podcast, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.